All right, legal listeners out there, buckle up, because today we are diving deep into a case that really puts a spotlight on the whole student speech versus school authority debate. You know, that constant tug of war.
McIntyre versus Bethel School District.
McIntyre versus Bethel School District. That's the one.
Yeah, this one is fascinating because it shows how something as simple as a t-shirt slogan can turn into a huge legal battle over constitutional rights.
Seriously, imagine getting suspended from school just because of what's written on your shirt. Yeah. I mean, the slogan in this case was, "The best of the night's adventures are reserved for people with nothing planned."
Right.
Now, come on, does that really sound like grounds for suspension? I mean, maybe a little cheesy, but...
Well, the school thought it was a lot more than cheesy. They saw it as promoting alcohol use and decided to come down hard on the students wearing these shirts.
Wait a minute, promoting alcohol? How did they even make that connection?
Well, the superintendent tried to tie it back to some really old ad campaign, but the link was incredibly weak. It felt like a real stretch to me.
So what did the school do exactly? I mean, you said they cracked down.
They went all out. We're talking suspensions, threats against student athletes. Even parents got caught in the crossfire with some facing threats of arrest.
Wow, talk about an overreaction. Yeah. It just seems so out of proportion to wearing a t-shirt with a slightly edgy slogan. Mm-hmm. It really makes you wonder, where do school officials get the authority to limit student expression like this, especially when there's no clear harm being done?
That's where the legal framework comes in. You're familiar with Tinker versus Des Moines, right? That landmark case?
Oh, yeah. Of course, Tinker versus Des Moines, the one that gave us the substantial disruption test.
Exactly. Schools can only restrict student speech if they reasonably believe it'll cause a major disruption to the school day.
Right. So in this case with McIntyre, the big question was, did the school actually have any solid proof that these t-shirts were going to lead to some kind of chaos in the hallways?
Exactly. And the Ninth Circuit ultimately sided with the students, saying essentially, look, you can't just assume these shirts are going to cause problems. You need actual evidence. And remember, these shirts have been worn on several occasions before without any issues.
So the school's argument that they were suddenly going to turn into these, you know, alcohol-fueled free-for-alls just didn't hold up.
Not at all.
Now, this is where things get really interesting for any aspiring lawyers out there. The court also had to deal with the whole issue of qualified immunity.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, they had to figure out if the school officials could be held personally liable for violating the students' rights.
And that's where it gets a little tricky. Superintendent Herod, the one who was really pushing this whole policy, he wasn't protected by qualified immunity.
So he was held accountable, but what about the school board members, the ones who actually created the policy in the first place?
Well, they were granted immunity because the court viewed their role as more hands-off. They set the general rule, but they weren't the ones directly enforcing it against these particular students.
So the takeaway for school officials is you can't just blindly enforce a policy without thinking through the potential constitutional problems, especially when it comes to free speech.
Absolutely. Now, the school tried to argue that they had more leeway to restrict these shirts because they were technically part of a class project. They were trying to use that Hazelwood versus Kuhlmeier precedent.
Oh, right. The one that deals with school-sponsored speech.
Yeah.
Like the school newspaper or a play. But the court didn't buy it in this case, did they?
They didn't. They said even though the shirts were from a class assignment, they weren't officially endorsed by the school, so they shouldn't be treated as school-sponsored speech. They were seen as expressions of personal views.
Which means they fell under that Tinker standard.
Yeah.
And as we know, that sets a pretty high bar for schools to clear if they want to restrict student speech.
Exactly. And that's what makes McIntyre so important. It really reinforces that strong protection for student speech, even if it makes some adults a little uncomfortable. You know, and it also reminds us that schools can't just rely on these hypothetical fears or vague concerns. They need solid evidence to justify putting limits on what students can express. And that evidence has to hold up under the Constitution.
And this is where the case gets even more fascinating.
Because let's face it, a lot has changed since 1993 when McIntyre was decided.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Back then, the internet was barely a thing. Can you imagine?
Exactly. And now you've got social media. It's like an extension of teenage life. It's where they hang out, debate, share their lives, and sometimes, you know, get themselves into a whole lot of trouble.
Which brings us to the big question. How do we apply these legal principles from McIntyre to this whole Wild West of online expression?
That's the challenge courts are dealing with more and more these days. Can schools discipline students for what they post on social media, even if it's off campus outside of school hours?
It's tricky, right? Because on one hand, schools have a real interest in maintaining a safe and orderly environment. And that includes the online world, too.
Absolutely. But on the other hand, students don't just surrender their First Amendment rights when they walk through the school gates or log on to social media.
So couldn't you argue that schools have this responsibility to prevent things like cyberbullying or online harassment, even if it means taking a more active role in regulating student speech online?
It's definitely a balancing act, and the courts are trying to find that sweet spot. One of the key things they look at is whether the online speech has a substantial nexus to the school environment.
Okay, break that down for us, non-lawyers. Substantial nexus sounds pretty technical.
It basically means there has to be a real connection between the speech and the school, its students or its activities. It can't just be some random rant about something completely unrelated, you know?
So, for example, if a student makes a threatening post online that specifically targets another student or a teacher, that would probably meet that nexus test.
Exactly. Or if they're using social media to bully or harass classmates, even if it's happening off campus, the school might have grounds to intervene.
But what about things that are a bit more in that gray area, like a student posting something controversial about politics or sharing a meme that some people might find offensive?
That's where things get even more complex. Generally speaking, courts have been more hesitant to let schools punish students for off-campus speech that doesn't directly target the school community.
That makes sense. We don't want schools turning into thought police, monitoring every opinion a student expresses online.
Right. The First Amendment protects even unpopular or controversial speech, and that includes student speech.
But then how do you balance that with a school's legitimate need to create a positive and safe online environment? It seems like a real tightrope walk.
It is. And as technology keeps evolving, these questions are only going to become more challenging. Think about all the new ways students are expressing themselves online. It's a constantly shifting landscape.
Oh, it really is a constantly shifting landscape. And it makes me wonder, what can schools actually do? What are some practical steps they can take to navigate this whole online speech issue?
Well, it all starts with having clear and effective policies. Schools need social media guidelines that are specific, understandable, and most importantly, constitutional.
So not just some vague statement about being respectful online.
Right. Vague policies can actually end up chilling student speech and lead to legal challenges. Schools need to be crystal clear about what types of online behavior they can and cannot regulate.
Can you give us an example? What would a more effective policy look like?
Sure. Instead of just banning inappropriate or disruptive speech, which is super subjective, a policy could focus on specific behaviors that directly harm the school community. Things like cyberbullying, threats of violence, or harassment.
Okay, so you're defining the behavior, not just throwing out this blanket ban on anything someone might find offensive.
Exactly. And it's not just about what the policies say. It's also about how their enforced schools need to be consistent. They can't pick and choose which online speech to crack down on based on, you know, personal opinions or biases.
So training for teachers and administrators is crucial.
Absolutely. Everyone involved in enforcing these policies needs to be on the same page and understand the nuances of student speech rights.
It's almost like we need this whole new curriculum on digital citizenship. Not just for students, but for the adults in charge, too.
I think you're right. We need to be teaching students about their rights and responsibilities when it comes to online expression. They need to understand that freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom from consequences. What they say online can have real-world impacts.
And those impacts can be long-lasting. I mean, think about how easy it is for things to go viral these days, or for posts to be dug up years later.
Precisely. Students need to be aware of their digital footprint and the potential for things to come back to haunt them, you know?
Yeah, but it's not just about scaring them with these worst-case scenarios, right? It's also about empowering them to be thoughtful and responsible digital citizens.
Couldn't agree more. We need to be teaching them critical thinking skills, media literacy, how to engage in respectful online debate.
It sounds like creating a school culture that values open dialogue and respectful communication is essential.
It really is. When students feel safe expressing themselves, they're less likely to engage in harmful or disruptive behavior online. It's about creating a space where they can share their perspectives, even disagree, but do it in a constructive way.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into McIntyre and this ever-evolving world of student speech, what are some key takeaways for our listeners?
Well, first and foremost, McIntyre shows us that student speech rights are crucial and deserve strong protection. But figuring out how that applies to the online world is complex and constantly changing.
It's like we're all figuring this out in real time, aren't we?
We are. And that's why it's so important to have those clear policies, ongoing training, and a commitment to open dialogue.
It's about finding that balance, you know, between protecting free speech and creating a positive and supportive school environment, both online and off.
Well said, and it's a conversation that needs to keep happening.
Absolutely. So to all our listeners out there, keep those legal minds sharp, stay curious, and never be afraid to use your voice both in the real world and the digital one. Until next time.